not sure if I have the authority to do this. I am, after all, only one historian, but I feel compelled to apologize on behalf of my entire profession. But I suppose I should back up a bit. There is a lot of confusion about what historians actually do. Some even doubt that in our fast-changing STEM-based educational system, the discipline remains relevant. But most still recognize the value of a historical perspective. And yes, almost all professionals understand that while history does not formally repeat, it rhymes with an extraordinarily impressive record. Indeed, history itself does not even stay in the past. Rather, it slams its way into the present and flows into the future with the regularity of a coastal ocean wave that offers extraordinary insights for those trying to understand the contemporary world and intelligently guess about the future. In fact, the study of history is never merely a recitation of the past. There is simply too much of it. No, history begins not with archives, but with questions we ask of the past. And those questions have changed over time. Indeed, earlier generations of historians tended to focus almost exclusively on the efforts of important men or followed educational mandates that insisted our role was to produce patriotic citizens by offering an attractive image of our national histories, while these days the experience of the masses of previously neglected groups, from those beyond the West to women and minorities, more often dominate the gaze of younger historians. Or more thematic issues, such as the ever-destructive role competitive nationalism has so often played in the lives of earlier generations. Nevertheless, it has become increasingly obvious that we historians have been terribly derelict in our duty to constantly revise what students need to know of the past. And most immediately have forgotten that despite all of the challenges of contemporary life, today's youth have managed in large measure to avoid one of the worst elements of the human experience, the constancy of horrific pandemic diseases, from cholera to smallpox, from bubonic plague to the killer flu that ravaged the world a mere 100 years ago. Indeed, while today's seniors spent their childhood in terror of polio, and retained fond memories of the saint-like doctors, Salk and Sabin, who saved us with their life-affirming vaccines. And while those in middle age never knew when the dreaded HIV virus might strike them down, most of today's parents managed to miss the regularity of pandemics and the very real experience of praying for vaccines that might save them, leaving an entire generation vulnerable to the scaremongers and charlatans who denigrate one of the greatest accomplishments of humanity. Thus, my professional mea culpa, as we historians have failed to compensate by integrating more of the history of medicine into our courses. Okay, I'm not suggesting that the history of medicine should be at the core of the historical curriculum. It is, after all, a difficult topic, often a story of professionalized torture and ignorance, sprinkled with horrific images of what infections looked like before antibiotics and the ravages of smallpox. But such knowledge needs to be part of the curriculum. Yes, we should know about Washington's role in forming American democracy, but we need to know as well about Washington's insistence on using an early version of vaccination to protect his men from British germ warfare attacks. And yes, the First World War is fundamental to an understanding of the modern world, but the horrific flu epidemic that followed cannot be a mere afterthought. Indeed, better knowledge of the history of medicine is in itself something of an intellectual vaccine, helping our students develop life-saving intellectual antibodies to protect themselves from those who propagate dangerous ideas about one of the greatest accomplishments of humanity, the knowledge necessary to fortify our own natural immune systems to protect our loved ones from many of the horrors our ancestors faced on a regular basis.